You're listening to CodeCast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. We are growing the community of developers across Zambia, one line of code at a time. Visit agoracode.community for more information, or like us on Facebook, at Code Agora. We're on Twitter too, at Code Agora.
Hi, my name is Mochu Kaingu. I'm the founder of Circuit Business Solutions and founder and CEO of Upturny. You're listening to CodeCast.
Welcome to episode 11 of CodeCast. We're back with the team. I'm so happy today we've got Wizzy and Cynthia here after such a long...
Full squad.
Full squad. Today we're going to do things a little bit different, right?
Different but the same.
Different but the same. Yeah. And we have a special guest, and he will introduce himself.
I'm Mucho Kaingu. I'm the founder of Circuit Business Solutions and the founder and CEO of Upturny.
Shall we do this, lady and gentlemen?
Let's do this.
Today in the news, Facebook, they're back again.
It's starting to sound like an obsession, Elias.
Listen.
It's like every week.
I just report on the news, okay? I don't make it, okay? So today in Facebook news, this is quickly going to become a section, but today in Facebook news, Facebook, Instagram, and WhatsApp were down a couple of days ago. Some of you might have noticed, some of you might not. Some of you, like me, might have blamed your courier. Sorry to my courier. But yeah, Facebook was down, Instagram was down, and WhatsApp was down. And they kind of didn't explain anything. So all they said was it wasn't a DDoS attack. And it had something to do with a server configuration change.
When has Facebook ever explained anything to us, though?
So this is something we're talking about, right? How Google's approach was different when something earlier in the week happened. Maybe you can talk more about that.
Yeah, so like I was looking at Facebook's response to everything. Uh-huh. And that was just after looking at Google's response to something that most people didn't even know happened.
Yeah.
Gmail was down for a bit, Google Photos.
I just learned that today.
Pretty much most of the cloud platforms. And there's like a lengthy explanation with details on each day and at what time they implemented a fix and what the ratio of errors was, like a detailed explanation. And so I'm just look for all the information Google takes from me. Sometimes I'm okay with them getting it.
Well, I think it's a good thing to be transparent. Now, I can't speak to what the problem was. Who knows, it might have been another data breach, but I'm just saying, like, it was weird that they only gave that explanation and that was that.
I'm just done.
Are we going to address how Cynthia is always the go-to person for everything Facebook?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Cynthia, defend yourself.
Firstly, I do not work for Facebook. I do not work for Facebook. Mm-hmm. If I did, I would have been driving my wonderful Range Rover, which is still stuck on my wardrobe because it is still in picture form. Yes.
Easy Facebook.
Oh, you can afford a picture of a Range Rover.
I am a volunteer for Facebook Developer Circles, uh-huh. where we teach the developer tools. Uh-huh. I do not work for Facebook. Point of correction.
So there's your disclaimer.
Yes, long awaited.
So if we see you with that Range Rover,
know that I am with Facebook. Yes, or Google.
Okay, speaking of Facebook developer circles, women in tech.
Oh yeah. So as Facebook developer circles, we held a week long of events that were targeted towards women, celebrating the women. It was from the 4th to the 9th. Of this month, and we targeted high school students, though they were college students, and the working women as well. I was not in the country. I was representing Facebook Developer Circle Lusaka in Harare, where I was doing a training for 2 days with kids and with college students. But back here, we had over 100 women come for the Women in Tech event, as opposed to the one last year, which was only about 50, was it 50?
Less than 50, actually.
Yeah, less than 50. Yeah. So we've seen almost a triple of that number, which puts a smile on my face.
Yeah, I think it puts a smile on our faces.
There's a big smile on
Cynthia. Yeah.
Of course.
Yeah, and I think we've always stressed how Cynthia is an advocate for everything women when it comes to technology.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember that interview, very passionate. We had an interview with Radio Christian Voice one day, and she was very passionate about it. It was very interesting.
I almost cried. So that's how passionate. You can. Oh, no, I always say you can mess around with the man that I am with, but don't mess around with my work for girls.
Facebook, if you're listening, that Range Rover. That Range Rover.
Still on my wardrobe.
Yeah, it would go really nicely with
a red one, by the way.
Red, really? Red?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
Red?
I know.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
Elias.
Anyway, we're very impartial. We don't judge people's choices.
But red, though.
So you use Apple devices.
Moving on.
Okay, so moving on. Something I found out this week. So you know how most countries now are looking at electronic voting and stuff, right?
Including Zambia.
Yeah.
Oh, yes, including Zambia. I'm very skeptical about that. You know, our problems here are quite... they're simple but complicated, you know? It's very interesting. So, like, basically, in Switzerland, right, they're about... Well, they're close enough to rolling out an electronic voting system. So they kind of opened it up for everybody to kind of, like, test it out and, you know, more like a hunt for bugs and that sort of thing. And... an MIT research lab kind of found like a serious flaw in the code, basically. So in terms of verification of results, right, in between the source of the votes to them being declared as official votes, there is this thing that happens where the results are shuffled and then decrypted and that sort of thing. So right there, there's a loophole and someone can actually like swap votes, legitimate votes for illegitimate ones, and no one would ever know that. And that's pretty crazy.
Yeah.
It's really, really crazy. But the good part is there's a bounty, like, you know, one of these bug finding bounty searches and stuff. They've opened it up so you can pretty much take part and win some money.
Yeah, true. I think where it's like we always say that I think where software is involved, there are always pros and cons. Eh? In this case, yeah, of course, costs, yeah, things like costs, efficiency, you don't have people counting votes. But again, where software is involved, there are a lot of vulnerabilities, there are a lot of backdoors, there are a lot of loopholes, and I don't know, I guess there are pros and cons to everything. You can't really, it's 50-50.
Speaking about software vulnerabilities, Boeing 737.
Oh yeah,
same thing I had in mind.
That's interesting though, because from everything I read, and I can't speak to the legitimacy of some of these reports, there's people that say they were like sending reports to Boeing about the actual bug, asking them to fix it.
Yes. Oh, I have the report. I read part of the report, well, the software bit. And they never really addressed the issue. It's only now. I'm told, I don't know if the report is out. Yeah, but it seems to be.
How'd you get the report though?
Never mind. Never mind.
Okay.
I'm actually very curious.
Yeah,
not the crash report. No, the first one that was issued out.
It's really interesting because they say they had a fix for it. Like, you had to, I don't know if you had to turn off something or, like, they had a fix for it, a temporal fix. They just never got around to fixing it permanently and stuff like that.
Yeah.
The funny thing I heard was that the rollout was delayed by the government shutdown in the U.S.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Oh, so Trump!
Does he know he's got, like, the blood of
57?
Yeah, it's crazy, but, like, yeah, like, software vulnerabilities. A serious business.
Speaking of software vulnerabilities, based on electronic voting, right? There's this, I forget what they're called. I know it's DARPA. I think it's like Defense Advanced Research or something like that. So like they're open sourcing this $10 million open like project on electronic voting. So it's basically a methodology. Like it's meant to kind of address some of the vulnerabilities that are there, like in the Swiss voting system and so on and so forth, and kind of form like a foundation for other people to build secure systems and kind of improve on like some of the issues that we've raised in some of these reports.
You know what I think though about electronic voting? I think blockchain will be the answer for electronic voting.
Yeah.
Because, well, yeah. the distributed ledger basically can be used to authenticate votes from different polling stations, etc.
I actually read something on that, funny enough, and I think blockchain is a really big thing, eh?
Yes.
And I was thinking of it. I think we need to do an episode on that because it's a word being loosely thrown around these days.
I mean, the association is Bitcoin, right?
It's Bitcoin.
Blockchain. Yeah, but
crypto.
But
it's way bigger than that. So it's
especially in the Zambian context, I think there's a lot of misunderstandings about that bit.
Mm. Yeah.
So if we could do an episode and educate the people, that would be really good.
Yeah.
Have you guys heard of Project Civil though?
Project Civil. No.
Yeah. So basically, in the US, journalism is sort of moving platforms to blockchain. So basically, journalism is moving to using blockchain as a platform. So one of the biggest issues they're trying to solve is false news as well.
Mm-hmm.
And I have no idea how exactly they're gonna do that, but that's something you should look into. And you know, there's a whole podcast on Project Civil, so I think I should put a link in the description.
Definitely,
of that.
Definitely.
Yeah. Okay. I'll put links as well for all the research on voting systems, electronic that is,
mm-hmm.
and all our listeners can look through and make a decision for themselves.
Mm. Okay, so to wrap up the news section, some housekeeping. Apple is holding an event on the 25th of March. I guess I'm the only person, well, today there's two of us that care about this. They haven't given any details. They haven't given any details, but rumors are going around that it has something to do with their new streaming service. So apparently they're thinking about rolling out the kind of like Netflix type service.
On that note, so Microsoft shut down theirs, right? This week?
Microsoft had a streaming service.
Yeah.
Exactly. Anyway, we won't go into that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay, yeah.
Why has it taken Apple so long, though?
Well, I honestly can't speak to why it's taken so long, but I don't think this is, like, strange for Apple. Apple aren't exactly...
They're always late to the party.
Yeah, you can say that, but they've never been the type of company that, like... I might get a bit of flack for this, but like they've never been the innovators in industry. Though, at least they haven't. They haven't been for a long time, not since like the Apple II and stuff.
Yeah.
So yeah.
No, that's true. That's true.
No, I mean like even things like the iPod and stuff. Like for them, it was basically looking at what the market needed, looking at what existed to fill that hole, and then improving on it. Okay, in more housekeeping news, Apple also announced their WWDC, so Worldwide Developers Conference, is going to be on the 3rd of June, which, by the way, is the day after my birthday, just saying.
So
you won't even afford a lot of the products.
Listen, why are you trying to take this away from me?
Is that him trying to say we need, like, his present should be as...
No, I was just saying, I just
if we're
going to
do Elias a favor, we'll get him an Android device for his birthday.
Oh, yeah. That
you guys
be good
are not
enough.
My friends. In...
No, that's aiming too high.
In the last piece of news, the Android Q beta is live. I don't use Android, so this doesn't matter to me.
I still don't use Android P, but we'll get into that.
So I think that wraps up the news for today.
News section.
Yeah.
Okay, today is an interesting topic. We're talking about technically we're talking about everything scalability. From a business perspective, from a technical perspective as well. We're gonna touch on that a little bit and it'll be good. So to start it all off, I'm gonna throw the mic over to Muchu. So tell us a little bit about yourself and how you got into this space, basically.
Okay. So, as Mukuma has introduced, my name is Muchu Kaingu. I'm the founder of Secute Business Solutions and the founder and CEO of Upturny. Upturny is a mobile app that provides access to the Zambian law. Just a little bit on my background. I've been developing software and apps for the past 10 years. I started out in consultancy, then went into employment up to a point where I was heading the IT department of one of the big retailers in Zambia called Spa. After which I decided to venture out and do what I loved the most, which is developing software. So we started out Circuit Business Solutions with my business partner Edwin Kamau, and it's been an interesting journey so far. In the 4 years that Circuit has been operational, we've developed retail apps, we've developed fintech apps, we've also developed agritech apps. Speaking of agritech apps, we developed one with Cynthia right here for Lima Links.
Cynthia, is that something you're not telling us?
Cynthia, you're in every space.
Are you sure you don't have the Range Rover?
I have been everywhere.
Are you sure you don't have a Range Rover somewhere?
No, it is there. A miniature one.
A 2D one.
Yeah.
So recently, Circuit developed an app called Upturney for a subsidiary business that we've incorporated called Upturney Limited. And why this space? We believe legal tech in Zambia has basically been neglected. The apps that are currently in use are quite dated, and we thought we could bring a little bit of modern technologies in terms of machine learning, natural language processing to this space, so that we could make that legal information very user-friendly for the ordinary Zambian. Upturney is an interesting business for us, and we also see the excitement in our users. We're getting a lot of positive reviews from our users, but now it's about taking the business from where it is to the general population, because our core belief is that basically justice should not be rationed. But a little bit more on that later. I'll dive right into probably what is our core topic for today, which is scalability.
Definitely.
So scalability for Circuit basically has been not looking at one particular vertical in technology, but looking at multiple verticals. Like I've said, we've developed for fintech, agritech, and now we are in legal tech. And it keeps getting more and more interesting for us. And just about now, we are venturing into the field of AI, and we should be able to develop very interesting apps in that area. Another area of scalability for our business is we're looking at the African region. Basically, we're not just looking for developing in Zambia. Some of our successful business models can be replicated to other African countries.
Yeah, and I know we had like a really long conversation before the recording started about the potential of the sub-Saharan market. We had this conversation in other episodes as well. We talked about the mobile growth space, when we talked about gaming, how many people now have access to internet, and how the growth rate is basically quadrupling, and so on and so forth. It's really interesting. And because of today's topic, it makes things a lot interesting. I know like a lot of us like are in spaces where we don't really think about it sometimes, but scalability is really like an issue.
I do, but I don't think not
it's
on
not
the
issue.
Okay.
For real, scalability is never the issue, especially right now.
The argument is it should be the issue.
Yeah, it should be the issue. The argument is you should be prepared.
Yeah, from the
for
beginning.
When it becomes
issue. True. I do agree that I think we should be prepared, but more of the issue is actually gaining, like, even just traction, even just getting the product out, you know. Scalability is obviously a big issue.
Okay. So, go ahead.
I just wanted to ask, and if like, you can't speak about this, that's fine, but like, how do you handle like preparing for scalability from a technical point of view? Because I'm actually really curious about that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So
I think you should charge him for this.
Okay.
So technologically for us, scalability is about how do we look at the applications we are developing. Mm-hmm. Are we developing for today, or we want to develop applications that 10 years down the line will still be in use? Yeah. Mm-hmm. So a lot has happened in the time that I've been developing to aid scalability. Cloud native applications, for instance, have just made life easier for developers.
Yeah.
Developer operations, for example, DevOps, has also improved quite significantly in the past few years.
Yeah,
and we are incorporating most of these technologies in our general operations of our business. So in terms of cloud native, we talk about Docker and Kubernetes that we use quite extensively. On Kubernetes, for example, we enable auto scaling, which then takes a lot of the load from the developer.
Yeah, that's
you just let the machine do its thing, right?
That's huge. Mm.
I guess it comes down to the technologies you're using, right?
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, because like even with AWS, it's like basically the people that are providing you with these services have scalability and things like fault tolerance in mind when you're building things on their platforms.
Yeah, and there's a lot of focus on testing as well. TDD is a big deal. Test driven development. Sorry, mm-hmm. sometimes.
Yeah.
So TDD is like a big deal. Mm-hmm. Stress testing as well. I had a few conversations with some guys from overseas, and there's the dynamic is very interesting. Like I'm in a space right now where testing is not at the forefront of development, for example. Mm-hmm. And I know that's a lot that's happening in a lot of spaces as well. I'll admit, like most spaces have been, like testing is not really at the top. Scale is not really at the top.
Start.
You so, make it, yeah. get traction,
true.
And then
you scale.
Fix the scaling
and
issue.
That's definitely a problem, right? Like people are more focused on, okay, my app works, okay, fine. And I think we've talked about this on previous episodes, right? Mm-hmm. Where like once your app is working, you're like, okay, I think I've done the bulk of the work.
And then
five more people try to access your app and it breaks down, you know.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think like we kind of need to like start pushing towards taking these things into consideration. Like you need to understand that you're not just building, like you so eloquently put it, you're not just building it for today or building it for the next 10 years. Mm-hmm. So you need to understand that your application is going to grow in terms of the clients it's serving.
And also another issue I touched on was DevOps. So I think it's important that developers incorporate DevOps into their overall work strategy, because with continuous integration and continuous delivery, you can always ensure that your bug fixes are timely. For example, new features, the pipeline for their movement from development all the way to the end user is also timely.
Mm. Yeah. I'm curious. Sorry. I'm more of a UI UX guy.
Okay.
Scalability. Does it have any implications on our end, or is it mostly a back end thing?
I think it also touches on UI and UX, because you might want to include a new feature
in your
new application, or you might want to basically improve the layout.
Yeah.
So in that regard, how do those changes then get to their end users? And by incorporating a DevOps strategy,
yeah.
then you can ensure that those updates are timely for the end users as well.
Yeah, yeah.
And also, obviously, this is 2019. Yeah. You cannot have an interface that was developed in 1999, for example.
Sure.
Okay, but my question is, where do you start? Like, it's we throw all these terms around, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like we talk about scalability, we talk about load balancing, we talk about monolith architecture, we threw in Kubernetes just now and Docker and all this stuff.
Yeah.
Like looking at the landscape now, and this comes from all the community work that we do, like most of us here do a lot of community work.
Mm-hmm.
And when we go to meetups, people have no idea what this stuff is. Where'd you start from, though?
Yeah.
I think Mokoma has already put part of the answer in his statement. We most of us are doing community work, right, so to speak. Mm-hmm. So it should start with us identifying what our developers are in need of. Then we strategically create trainings based on those things. Mostly, I've noticed we dwell on the coding. What language are you coding in? How well are you able to document? Yeah. But we're not talking about the testing part. Teach the developers how to do test-driven development. Yeah. They should also look at scalability. I know most of our developers, unfortunately, are looking at developing only for the local environment, but we need to change our mindset. We should be looking at developing for the rest of the world, not just Zambia. Yes, it's good to also do solutions that are solving issues that we have here, but as we are developing those, can we also look at making them scalable enough to be used elsewhere? Like, for instance, if there was somebody who was talking of right now there's been actually many talks about payment systems and whatnot. Mm-hmm. It's not only us who are facing that issue. Maybe even Malawi, our neighbors, are facing the same issue. Maybe Angola, Namibia. So now imagine if you actually do an app that is really properly done. It won't be just for Zambia. You can actually sell it out to other countries as well.
Yeah. I've got a question, though. Does it matter what language you're coding in when it comes to like issues of scalability and stuff? Like, how much does it matter in the overall grand scheme of things?
Honestly, I can't speak to that. I don't think it matters that much in the grand scheme of things, because basically scalability is about how much, and correct me if I'm saying the things that don't make sense, but how many clients your application can serve, right? Mm. So if, say for example, you develop an application, and your application today is serving 500 people and it's serving them no problem, right? As it's growing, your infrastructure needs to
change.
Yeah, it needs to be able to adapt to the increasing load, to, you know, more and more people accessing your application. So when you're talking about like programming languages, again, I don't know. Maybe there's a difference if you're using Python and Kotlin, but like I don't really think the issue is that's at the core of like how scalable your system is.
Yeah. I think you make very valid points there. Mm-hmm. But just perhaps one thing to add, and maybe people don't look at this in terms of scalability. One consideration that we have is looking at a language where you can easily find talent, right? Because part of scalability is ensuring that you can quickly build new features into your app. So in that regard, I think language can be a consideration.
Yeah.
We pro JavaScript, by the way, and we have the JavaScript stack from front end to back end.
Isn't everybody pro JavaScript these days? Like, it's like the trending topic. It's like the trending language, right?
Yes. And some of the considerations, obviously, for JavaScript on the back end, for example, is microservices are very easy in Node.js as opposed to PHP, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So these are some of the things that you can look at.
So wait, have you implemented any microservices in your application? Like, for example, app training?
Yes. So we basically, that's our new model of building. It makes sense that we don't have this monolith of an application. It makes sense to have microservices dedicated to specific functionality. Mm.
Okay. So, sorry, last question. Hopefully it doesn't turn into like a Q&A. But because I was thinking about it, right? Everything pros and cons, right?
Yeah.
One of the biggest issues with like microservices and scaling large applications is debugging, for example.
Mm-hmm.
So like, have you guys had any issues with debugging and microservices playing a role from like a con perspective and not a pro?
Mostly it's on the pro side, because it's easier to debug when you're looking at a specific problem. So if we identify a problem in a particular functionality, we can easily identify the microservice that's providing that functionality. And instead of looking at an entire code base or for the entire application, we just look at that specific area.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, because I mean, ultimately, scalability should really be determined by, you know, how efficiently tasks are, you know, divided and broken down. Eh? Mm-hmm. So, you know, Elias should be able to do one thing, I should be able to do another thing, but within the same app efficiently.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. So, yeah, microservices.
I'm laughing because Python Khaleesi.
I thought we're past that.
No, I brought it back. I came back.
Come back. But in terms of Python, I mean, there are certain things that you can't beat Python on. Data science, machine learning, etc.
So yeah, definitely. Like certain languages are suited for certain things.
Actually, your question on whether scalability has something to do with programming languages. There are some programming languages like Scala, which are made in such a way that they actually provide you more tools to actually make scalability easier for you to achieve. Yeah.
Mukuma, in terms of builder and the tools, I think with the rate at which programming languages are being released, you just have to choose what tool you have to use, right?
Oh yeah, we had this conversation on episode 8, right? We talked about specialization yeah. and jack of all trades, like the rate. I mean, have you seen the road to JavaScript? Like getting into JavaScript, like how many React?
I was talking about this, I think, on the same episode. Like Dart comes out, and like I'm now thinking to myself, okay, now I'm proficient at Kotlin. I'm like, and then they come out with Dart, and you're now thinking to yourself, wow, like just when you're thinking like, okay, I'm getting good, they come out with something that is supposed to like take over everything that Kotlin. It's not. But
I'll tell you something about that. Uh-huh. It's something that I'm excited about, and for this particular reason, Google is investing heavily in it. Google's new operating system, Fuchsia.
I
think will be. It will be released maybe 4 years from now, and it's going to power everything IoT and mobile devices, laptops, etc., etc. So it's a good time to get into that, I think.
Yeah, but then, if you remember,
by then there'd be
no. Listen, here's the issue, right? And like that's actually the reason why initially I was thinking about getting into Dart. I'm not anymore, but you see like kind of where the language is going. So you see it with we saw it with JavaScript, right?
Mm-hmm.
JavaScript once you were able to do JavaScript full stack. And then all these frameworks started coming out. And then all these tools that, like, now you're starting to think to yourself, this is something that I could invest a lot of time in, become really good at, and I know that it's going to serve me in the future. And Dart is looking like that. But again, Kotlin was looking like that when they introduced it into Android Studio and whatnot. And I think it's still there because, like, the thing with Kotlin is it still works on the JDK and stuff, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's basically like you're coding in Java, except you're not because Java sucks. But yeah, like my point is like I think it's good to look into like branching into like new languages, especially languages like Dart, which also is being used for the front end framework that
Flutter.
Lets you Flutter, yeah, exactly. So like clearly there's a future for Dart, but again you have to look at like
the landscape.
The landscape.
You know, you just reminded me of what happened. You know, This is an ongoing conversation every time we talk about picking a platform or a framework or a language for like building like an application or whatever. Mm-hmm. Actually, we're still discussing that in terms of building like a website for the podcast, for example. Like we're still on the platform.
Let's use Dart.
And I was actually going to get into Angular because Angular 1, you know, Angular 2, Angular 2.js and so on and so forth. Then Angular 4. Then 5, 6, 7.
And now 8.
And in
Wait,
terms of
what?
Scale. Yeah. Guys, like we talked about this 2 years ago. Like, look at how it hurt a lot of companies that were already building applications using Angular.
Angular to Angular 2. Like, it screwed over a lot of companies.
No, I'll tell you one thing. We still have apps that run on Angular 1 because they work in Angular 1. And it doesn't make sense to break them, you know?
That's the thing.
If it works, don't break it.
That's build a product that works. Eh? I think a lot of times as developers, we get hung up on
what's
the nitty-gritties. The languages. Like, I don't know how many languages we've mentioned just here. And you know, and that's how people are capitalizing by just knowing what product is needed and then finding the right means to build it.
But jumping into that and talking about what I just said, if someone's using Angular 1 in 2019 and it's working just fine, what's the growth metric like? Like in terms of applying new ways, simple things, authentication, for example. From authentication into when you talk about Kubernetes and cloud infrastructure, like what kind of features are available for Angular 1 that will help you actually scale?
So like support.
Yeah, even just support.
Yeah.
And this is where Docker comes in because Docker is really agnostic in terms of what framework or what technology you're using. As long as you dockerize that app, you can basically future-proof it.
Thank you for mentioning Docker. Could we have an episode, please, on Docker?
Yes, please. High five. I agree.
Virtual high five?
No, like for real, like containerization is like really just... It's a really big deal. And once you start understanding all the things that it can do for not only how you develop your apps but also your workflow, so definitely we need to do an episode on Docker.
Fun fact, Apple is using still using Angular 1 on one of their platforms.
Apple is using Angular. Okay, wow, I didn't
but
know
you,
that
but you realize that a lot of these like platforms are kind of like crossing over, like there's no real distinction. Like
this,
people are using whatever
like the rivalries thing is
gone.
It's really just like us that, like for them, they're running a business. Whatever works for them works for them.
The rivalries amongst us who are locked in the individual
ecosystem, which is what they want. But from their point of view, like it really doesn't matter.
It's fine with them.
I love what Microsoft is doing as well in the open space. Open source space.
They're the largest contributor to open source, by the way.
That would be huge.
That was last year. I don't know about
we
now.
We talked about this in one of our episodes, did we?
I think Microsoft, just what Microsoft are doing, like even just as a company, like
they've seen the future.
What's their CEO's name again?
Satya
Nadella.
Yeah.
Like he's, ever since he came in, like everything is changing. Yeah. Even the whole open source push.
And
do
you remember how much
in.
Crap he got for when he just came in?
Just the flat design. Just the flat design.
Like he got so much. I honestly think it was unfair at the time. Because now you're looking at Microsoft and the trajectory. Like even as you know, I'm a gamer. Some of you might know, some of you might not.
As you know.
Said as you know. Are you saying you might know?
Don't say Xbox.
Okay, so their gaming platform. they recently dropped Halo. Well, they didn't drop it. They said that they're going to drop it on PC.
Yo, there was some banner on that.
Yeah, it was huge. But it was even huger because they're not only dropping it on the Microsoft Store, they're dropping it on Steam, which is a direct competitor for the Microsoft Store. And they've been doing this a lot, right?
Confusing.
And it's basically just saying, look, we want it to be available wherever it can be available. Like they're actually like in really good relationships with a lot of these companies.
Yes, and that's what they're doing. I was showing you something of how they killed their streaming service, Groove.
I didn't even know that was a streaming service.
Oh, it's Groove.
Oh, yeah, it's Groove. Yeah. So
I remember
Groove. Finally, Groove died. And they're actually encouraging their users to use Spotify. Ah. So that's what they're doing.
Speaking of apps dying, Allo died too, by the way.
Oh, yeah. RIP.
What's Allo?
We barely knew you.
Oh, exactly. Like Google Allo was basically an iMessage.
Yeah, except it wasn't as good.
No, I think it was brilliant. It just didn't have any uptake.
Look, Allo was a really good idea, but then they fragmented it with the other one, the video one. What was it called?
Duo.
So you have your Allo, you have your Duo, then you have your native texts. And this is the problem that I think across the board Google has issues with.
You have your Plus.
Yeah, you have your Google Plus, you have your Hangouts. Like, what are you supposed to use? The reason iMessage works is not because it is this revolutionary thing. It's because when I go to my text messages and I'm texting you, it's going to recognize that this guy doesn't have an iPhone. Green bubble. Send him a text. When I'm texting someone else, someone who has an iPhone, it's going to be like, oh, this is an iPhone user. Okay, automatically switch to iMessage rather. And then you get the perks of iMessage with that when you see that it's a blue bubble. So it's that different approach that I think is the biggest. I'm not emotional, okay?
We talk about gaming, right? That's the first platform where scalability was the biggest issue.
Mm-hmm.
Like the whole decentralization and servers and whatnot and all this stuff with online gaming.
Yeah, it started from there.
Yeah, I mean, because it's an issue. Like nowadays they have all these betas, which I just think are glorified demos. But like mostly they're testing for scalability, right? They're testing to see that, okay, if we put this out and a bunch of people access it at the same time,
Minecraft,
is it going to break? You know? So, yeah. Let's appreciate the impact gaming has had on scalable infrastructure.
Also, your life allies.
Yeah.
Anyway, jabs aside.
Oh, was that a jab? I thought you were just stating facts.
Okay, boys. So, I am curious as to what different approaches we know of scalability.
AWS manages this, and basically what it does is you have your little like virtual thing. I don't want to start using technical terms. Then you have different like ECs, you have different like instances, right? And then what it does is it scales accordingly. So if it notices that a bunch of traffic is coming in and stuff like that, then it adds an instance and stuff like that.
Yeah, so basically, so the vertical is also called scaling up, right? Mm-hmm. Horizontal is called scaling out.
Yeah.
The vertical.
Okay. you just got it. Huh?
No, I just remembered this from the Holy Grail of software engineering, Somerville.
Somerville, yeah, the software
engineer. Exactly what you said.
The software engineer's Bible.
I still have that book, by the way, on my desk.
8th or 7th?
7th.
Yeah, I think I have 8th on mine.
Holy grail.
Yeah.
And we're so skipping up. It's as what Mukuma said, the way you're using the same machine, but then the scaling out, as it emphasizes, you're now going to be using distributed infrastructure.
Mm.
Yes. Nodes, instances.
Yeah. Well, in your opinion, which would you...
In practice, we found that horizontal scaling is more effective because if you scale up one instance, you still create a bottleneck, right?
Mm-hmm.
If that instance goes down, then you're in trouble.
Yeah.
Whereas if you scale horizontally, one instance goes down, you can still save your application.
Yeah.
So that adds like fault tolerance to your system, right? Yeah.
Hectic. So,
as well as cost, there's also a cost benefit because if you have multiple smaller instances, obviously you have a better cost management than to have one huge instance.
So we're talking about like the different platforms and how like you can make your system as scalable when using certain tools. So like one of the big things that like when like you're doing this research, I found like AWS actually scales down to reduce the cost. If so, take for example, what example can I give? Okay, take the Global Game Jam, right?
Mm-hmm.
The Global Game Jam is the perfect example of a site that needs to scale up but also needs to scale down at certain points, because during the Global Game Jam it gets
clogged.
absolutely hammered, mm-hmm. right? They get hit like for that weekend period with so much, so they need to scale up during that period. That's but then the rest of the year, like almost no traffic. Yeah. Well, I don't know if it's almost no traffic. I can't speak to how much traffic they get, but it's relatively less, right? Mm-hmm. So to reduce costs, you don't want to be running like this big system, like having like all these things that are eating up money for the sake of, you know, when the global game jam happens, we're going to be ready.
Yeah.
Nah. So like there's that whole, so I don't know if you can speak to that. I'm skirting around asking you specifically what technology.
Well, I think it's also application specific.
Mm-hmm.
So there are applications that are very hungry for resources that obviously you have to scale up. Gaming is one of them.
Yeah.
Crypto mining is another application, obviously, that you need to scale up. But if you talk about generally saving information to clients, most mobile apps, Facebook, for example, it makes sense to save that application from multiple smaller instances.
Yeah.
Really interesting. Before, like, application scaling, right?
Mm-hmm.
Not just servers or instances. What about like at a database level? Like, do we have some kind of insight on how scalability affects an application from that perspective?
I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna talk about AWS. It's what I know.
Poster boy.
Like. For databases, I think it's how can I say, it's a bit different. So I think you can also have different instances of your databases, right?
Mm-hmm.
As long as there's that roundabout communication where if something is changed on this, then the backups should be changed as well.
Replication.
Yeah, exactly. But then there's things like in AWS, it's like the S3 bucket. So that's where like you store your like big files. So it's like it's a bucket of stuff that you store, and then your database is basically referencing that stuff and stuff like that. For that, I don't really know how the backups work. I'm still like getting deep into AWS, but I don't really know how the backups work for that data. So. Example, Netflix is, I think, the biggest user of AWS right now. So their database basically manages, like, you know, user information and, like, user catalogs and stuff like that. And then the actual video files are on the S3 bucket. So they have different instances of, like, I don't want to call them containers, but, like, kind of, like, yeah, I guess I'll call them containers. And then in those containers, they're like different EC2s and different S3s and different like databases that are basically like a copy of what exists in a different container, which has instances of its own, right? So if you're accessing Netflix from Zambia, you're not accessing it from the same, what are they called? Let's say you're not accessing it from the same data center, but that data center has a bunch of different containers that is backing up your stuff, making sure that if one instance goes down, there's that word again, fault tolerance, right? It's able to adapt and say, okay, this instance is down, go to the next one. And because the instances of your databases are communicating with each other, it's scalable because when a bunch of people are hitting it, they're not all hitting the same one, but it's also fault tolerant. So if one goes down, it can reroute you to another one.
Okay. It's interesting you mentioned Netflix stack. I'll share because they do make it very open in terms of what kind of technology they're using for their infrastructure.
Yeah.
So if anyone's curious about that, I'll post a link as well.
Mm-hmm.
And also just one thing in terms of database scalability, something that startups can take advantage of. a database as a service works brilliantly. That way you don't have to manage the database on your own. Your backups are taken care of, your replication is taken care of. All you need to do is just connect to the API.
And that's actually pretty good for like one-man, two-man teams with money.
True. I was just thinking the same.
That's interesting. So we kind of got into like scalability across industries. We talked about streaming services.
Yeah.
We touched a little bit about gaming as well. General mobile apps. And I don't know what the plan is. Like for the mobile apps that you're building, App Turny, for example, like is there like a plan in terms of scalability? Like what's your like 3 to 5 year plan looking like? I don't know if I'm allowed to ask that kind of question, though. I'm just curious.
Well, I'll not answer specifically about our expansion plans, but just to say that obviously we're not looking at Zambia alone as a market. We're looking at scaling to other African countries. Technologically, we're looking at scalability in terms of growing the user base even locally here in Zambia, and having the necessary instruments in place to ensure that as our user base grows, our resources can auto-scale.
Okay, this is off the topic of scalability. It's a question that I've been wanting to ask you. in terms of App Turny, right?
Mm-hmm.
Currently it's in English only, right?
Yes.
Are you thinking of, because I'm looking at it, it's providing information about the laws of Zambia, right? And as a citizen, I need to know.
Mm-hmm.
So now we have citizens that actually are not really conversant with English.
Mm-hmm.
Are you looking into translating some of these laws, especially the common ones that every citizen at least should know?
Mm-hmm.
It's one thing that personally I've been grappling with in terms of technology. I've been grappling with, does it make sense to translate?
Yeah.
Because can people who do not read English, can they read local
language? Yeah.
That's one question.
Some do.
Okay.
Yeah, I've met some that actually do. My grandmother was one of them, funny enough. She could actually read the Bemba words, but the English ones, not so good.
Okay.
Yeah, because what's also interesting is when we look at, let's say, the trajectory in terms of education, right?
Mm-hmm.
I know we're focusing on local languages in different provinces and stuff like that, but then it's a duality, like it's both English and the local language.
Yeah.
So it sounds like a luxury.
Mm. It sounds like a luxury
to like translate,
because
if you can build in one language and eventually everybody, like, come on, we're pushing education for all.
Yeah.
Like we're building more schools.
Yeah.
Like, what is the base right now in terms of potential users, and what would it be like in the next 3 to 5 years? And if you look at those numbers, would education have penetrated even more? Like, how many more literate people would we have, and so on and so forth?
And in terms of that translation, well, it would make sense for App Turny to translate, if that then translates to a growth in the user base. There was actually a platform that Bongo Hive worked on called Bantu Babo.
Bantu Babo, yeah, I heard about
that. Is
that
still online or not?
I'm not quite sure. I would have to check.
Because it would make sense to make that a service, and then local apps could then basically integrate.
Just integrate with that, and yeah, it makes the whole process easier if you're just integrating something that already does the job for you.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, and sorry, just to go off topic as well, not off topic of scalability. Like, how keen are your stakeholders like to get on board? Like, I'm talking of the major ones. Like, have you had any feedback from LAS? Are they fully involved?
Yeah, so we work closely with LAS. We actually initially unveiled App Turny at the last year's LAS AGM.
Yeah, okay.
Yes, and we have a working partnership with them, where they support us in whichever way they can to ensure that our application is successful.
Yeah, because I was thinking that's a huge opportunity.
Yes.
Like, my dad has this library just with volumes and volumes. Like, if you could just get the app on his phone and, you know, search for whatever case or, you know, that would go a long way. I know there are those CAS legal discs and, you know.
Yeah.
that's hectic. So, yeah, I was
Yes. Kaiska Sligo is like a, it's like a big deal. Like
there's an ICT law that was passed last year. So if you don't know that,
yeah,
it would be great to know. Yeah, yeah, there, so as well as other systems that are being implemented.
Which ICT law?
It's called the Information and Communications Technology Association of Zambia
Act. It has. Mm-hmm.
It was actually passed.
Yeah, yes. Passed
last year.
No, obviously, because as you know, if you're working in the industry, you now have to register. You know that, right?
Yeah.
So there's an AGM coming up. I think if it's not in April, it should be in May. I'm not sure. Anyway, so if you want to listen to more shows, we're on 10 platforms. We're on Spotify, we're on Google Podcasts, we're on Stitcher, we're on Breaker, we're on Radio Republic. Coming soon to TuneIn as well. Oh, yeah, and Spotify. That's if you're like Elias, who like... So we're on Twitter, we're at CodecastZM, we're on Instagram, CodecastZM, and we're on Facebook, and that's CodecastZambia. That's if you want to catch us there.
So we have a website, abgeni.org, and then we also have a presence on the iOS App Store, as well as on the Google Play Store.
That's huge.
Thanks.
And your personal plug? Like we plug like social media at the end of the podcast, like a tradition now.
At Puchu Kayengu, that's both Facebook and Twitter.
Elias
is JOR _
please tell the listeners to get their pen 360 and paper.
Okay, so that's Sourbones on Twitter, Instagram.
Is there an _ in Sourbones?
Yes, between Sour and Bones.
Ah, okay. I feel like you should have stated the _.
Fair enough.
Mine is Python Khaleesi, no _, no dashes, no /.
The shade.
And I'm at the Zambian _. Yeah, straightforward.
What's is up it? With you, men and _?
Huh? No, guys.
We're not doing this.
This is reaching. Anyway, this is where it ends. We'll catch you guys on the next one.
Yeah.
Codecast out.
You've been listening to Codecast Zambia, brought to you by Agora Code. Visit agoracode.community for more information or like us on Facebook. That's @CodeAgora. We're on Twitter too @CodeAgora.